Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to PodNuts Daily, episode number 415, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined today by Brad Torrey from TTCSComputerServices.com. Welcome to the show again, Brad.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me. Always love the opportunity to come on, and it's great that you have this community built up. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Well, I'm ready to hear some exciting stories from the trenches, if I can steal that from a couple different people, and just kind of hear what we've kind of the last time you're on, you kind of told your backstory and what you do and what you're all about. My understanding is today you've got some stuff from the trenches, stuff that you're dealing with, and even a special story that happened today.
Yep. Yeah. For the 30-second version of what we do, if you didn't catch the last episode I was on, we're basically an IT support company for small and medium business in Southern California. So we just we have like five regular clients of varying sizes that keep us pretty busy, and been exploring the different options with managed services and how to structure our company for growth and all that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, today almost didn't make the show. I got woken up in a panic call from my one of our biggest managed service clients, and they have their main location. They do income tax prep and insurance service, like auto insurance. They are in a little center, and there's a Taco Bell there. And the call from the owner was, there was an explosion at the Taco Bell last night. Our power's flickering off and on. What should we do? Our server's kind of up and down. Should we turn everything off, or what should we do? But we need to be operational. It's tax season right now, and this is
right.
This is it. They've invested in advertising and upgraded a lot of IT stuff with us, and this is their first run at a service contract with us. We've been just sort of break fix up till now. They have five locations, and three of them they were remote back into the central site, which is the one that was down, to operate. So, they were in a pinch. So I'm like, oh, okay. And then the funny thing about them is that they have, it's a family, so that runs it. So I'll get a call from, the technically like the owner is the mom. And then I'll get a call from, the two adult daughters that manage different offices, and they're all calling me. They're like, how fast can you get here? I said, how fast can you stop calling me so I can take a quick shower and get in my car?
Right. I will be there when I get there.
Yep. So, yep. An hour later of handling their calls, you know, cause I'm not going to ignore their calls in a crisis, I finally get to leave the house. And when I get there, I don't know if they weren't there when we were talking, because there was no explosion at Taco Bell. I don't know how you get that wrong. So what happened was a Mylar balloon blew. It was crazy windy last night, and everybody out in the, especially where you are, I'm sure you're going to be annoyed to hear this. Today, we have the Santa Ana winds that blow through periodically, and they come in from the inland. It's 85 degrees here today. I'm actually sweating. It's awful.
Yeah, thanks for that. I appreciate that. That just makes me feel all warm and fuzzy inside. Are we done with this interview yet?
yes, we have to complain about turning our AC on because in January. But anyway, so it gets really windy last night, and a Mylar balloon flies into some power lines and is somehow able to like connect across the two wires, and it blows up a transformer next to the Taco Bell.
Okay.
But it didn't affect the Taco Bell other than to knock out their power.
Okay.
But yeah, so I got there and their power was out, and then it's funny, our UPS system kept the internet going and the network going, and the server was going for like 45 minutes. So they have VoIP. They were still getting calls. They were still, you know, like they had internet. They just didn't have any computers.
How long does a UPS actually last normally?
Totally depends on the size and what you plug into it. We have kind of, they're mostly there for like kind of, well, it's good for this kind of situation. So the server can be powered down gracefully and all that kind
right,
of stuff.
Sure.
And I feel that they're better for taking a good surge. If a power surge comes through, they might be a little bit beefier than just a surge protector. I don't know. That's just a theory I have. But
no, it's true. As long as you get a quality one, it is absolutely true.
Yeah. So we've got a couple of APGs or APC battery backups. They're good for about, with all the stuff we have plugged into them, they're good for about 45 minutes to an hour.
Okay.
Which is plenty of time to figure out that there's a problem and go shut the server down before it has to get hard powered off. So.
But you still had to get there within that period of time to be able to, could you have walked them through the steps of shutting the server down themselves?
Oh yeah. There's a monitor, keyboard, and mouse. In the back. But I had internet access, so I actually could get into it.
Good point. Okay.
So, I was surprised, but I guess it didn't affect the AT&T circuit coming in. So as long as we could power the modems and the router, we were good.
Now, with that being said, I know from a residential standpoint, if you have Comcast or, whatever ISP service and you have their phone service, the router / modem that they give you will have a battery pack in it. And I can't remember how long the battery pack, it will stay on, but it's powered on while the electricity is going through it. As soon as you lose power, you should still be able to use phone. I'm not sure about internet. So, is that the same type of setup, or was it just that the stuff was plugged into your battery backups and they were just able to run from there?
Yeah, more just the way we have it set up.
Okay.
With the battery backup. We have a VoIP carrier that we've partnered with. So we're a reseller with them, and they're just all cloud hosted VoIP. And so as far as equipment in the office, it's literally just router and phones.
Gotcha. Okay.
So if we have a PoE switch that can power the phones. And so as long as the PoE switch and the router and the internet are all on battery, theoretically the phone system can carry on, even in a disaster.
Now, what is a PoE switch?
Power over Ethernet. So it delivers the power. The switch actually delivers the power to security cameras, phones, and some Wi-Fi devices. So
okay,
they don't have to be plugged into power.
Awesome.
So it's kind of like the old school phone that you used to have in your kitchen on the wall that it didn't get plugged into power. The phone line delivers enough power to the phone for it to work.
Right. Okay.
But it's beefier because it's an actual IP phone. But they're awesome, and especially if we have like a remote switch that we have in a couple locations, we're trying to kind of put them out everywhere. The switch, it's a power strip. It looks like a surge protector, but it's got an internet connection, a hardwired Ethernet jack, and it pings out to the internet. And if it doesn't get a ping, it has some algorithms, and if it waits, if it doesn't get a ping for like 30 seconds to a minute, it'll initiate a power cycle on the router, the modem, and all that stuff itself.
Oh, very cool.
So if it's a problem that can be solved by just a reboot, then you'll be down for like 2 minutes. You may not even know what happened. It'll just be better.
Okay. So it's smart enough to know that. That's very interesting.
Yeah. And it has a cool app on your phone. So if when you plug things in, you label in the software what you've plugged into it. So outlet one is a router. Outlet two is a switch. And then you have an Android app. I think there's an iOS app. And you can say, okay, I'm going to go to that site and I'm going to reboot their router by pushing this, just tap this button and it reboots the router. It's pretty cool.
And you can do that from anywhere. You don't have to actually be on site for that?
Totally anywhere. As long as they're online and you're online.
Wow. No, that's great.
Yeah, those are our favorite little new tool. Yeah, but so then when we realized our phones were going to go down, because they're on VoIP and it's hosted, so it's not on site. There's nothing really dependent on the office, and they have 5 locations. We just changed the inbound route on that phone number for that office to ring the other offices. So they're not missing any calls now. The other offices are able to pick up the phone.
Okay. Now, with the VoIP system, I'm curious, and I don't know exactly how VoIP works in different scenarios. Is that something that you can actually forward to, since it's cloud-based, to like a cell phone?
Yes, we would have done that if that's... They chose to send it to the other offices.
Okay.
But we could totally... Actually, I am on the same voice carrier. It's actually the name of the company, Voice Carrier.
Okay. Very, very good.
And they deliver us, our office number. And I don't have a desk phone because I'm all over the place anyway, and I don't want to deal with it. So it just goes to my cell phone.
Yeah, because I use something similar. I use Grasshopper, and Grasshopper basically forwards to my cell phone, and that's my business line coming into my regular cell phone that I already use.
Yeah, I used Grasshopper. I liked them. I don't remember why I switched away, but now it's because we were a reseller for this company, and they're pretty great, and they give us, because we have enough accounts with them, they just give us our business line for free. So,
oh, very cool. No, that's really, hey, you can't beat that, right?
But yeah, with all the headaches with VoIP, today it was definitely a win, being able to say, hey, well, your phones are down, so let's just boop, switch them over to there.
Gotcha.
And you don't miss any calls. But so my takeaway from all this was they were obviously upset because now they're on a service plan, and even though we've done all this work, they were down today.
Which had nothing to do with you. The electricity was out.
The entire block had no power.
Okay.
And so I don't know how that I could have prevented this from happening.
Well, and not only that, quite honestly, outside of maybe a generator, is there any way that you could actually stop this type of thing, losing electricity, from being downtime?
Well, yeah, I mean, we were talking about that, and I'm like, yeah, we could have prevented this. We could have put in a crazy battery backup that would have lasted 5 hours or something. I don't know how much those cost. No one ever has wanted to go that road, or a generator.
Right.
But 6 months ago when we would have been talking about setting something like that up, and we gave them the estimate, they would have told us to go, put that
go
somewhere else.
Go fly a kite. Right.
Yeah. So, but then this happens and now they're upset. So the next meeting we're going to have, is going to be it's going to be like the highlights. Like, here's the highlight reel of how this disaster played out, because there's a lot of like high points, a lot of good things that happened today because of the work that we've been able to do in the past few months. Those UPSs didn't exist before. So before I took over that office, there was a hole drilled through the wall to the bathroom. There was a household extension cord with the ground prong snapped off, plugged into an outlet in the wall of the bathroom through the wall. And then that plugged into the server, and it actually plugged in, that little household power cord was plugged into 2 just like not surge protected, just cheap straight power strips. And they had, their network equipment and their server and probably a vacuum cleaner when the cleaning people are there, all plugged into that outlet with no ground and no surge protection and no battery backup. Since then, I went in and we had some electrical run cleanly from an outlet, up to the server area. So we fixed the electrical connection itself. We put in battery backups. We surge protected all of the computers in the office, which they were just plugged straight into the wall as well. And at the end of the day, there was no physical damage to any of their equipment. And that building got hit with a jolt when that transformer went down.
Oh, I can imagine.
The half of their fluorescent lights, the ballasts are broken from the power surge, so they're all flickering. So we know that there was a pretty good hit to that office, and the probably $8,000 worth of gear they've got sitting in that back office is all still working. So you're right. Welcome.
Exactly. You know? No, yeah. No, that's great that you're able to put this stuff down and say, hey, here's our high points to the things that we've done for you. And the reality is, I don't think you're going to find anybody unless you want to spend literally thousands and thousands of dollars to have a system that's not ever going to go down with a power outage. I don't know that they're, and I don't know that that would be cost effective, even though you might be able to do it.
Yeah. And we've talked in the past couple of years about moving their server to some kind of a cloud hosted server, you know, like Amazon S something, or, you know, we could do that, but then they're worried that if there was any problem with the internet, they would lose they wouldn't be able to work if the internet went down. We're like, yep. So
catch 22.
Yeah.
How many times is the power actually going to go out in an office building during the year?
In our experience, this is the first time, but it's not the internet's gone down a few times. So,
okay.
So I think we, one day versus the five times that, you know, we made the right move.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you guys, you justified exactly what you put together and you made it work. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm looking at it the way you are. It's a win.
Yeah. So they might be more interested in spending a little bit of money on some redundancy. We could virtualize their server and throw it up in an offsite hosted location like Amazon and have it kind of sitting in the wings. There'll be, you know, some setup costs and a few, you know, but it won't. They wouldn't have been interested in that until now. Now they're interested in that kind of thing.
Well, I would have thought about the thing of maybe having battery backups on workstations or maybe the main workstation or something like that. Maybe they'd be interested in something along those lines.
Right. Yeah. They actually asked me if I could bring them some more battery backups and get two of the computers up and running. And then there was a lot of back and forth and they were like, no, we'll just bring laptops in. And then they didn't do that either. But by the time I got there, it didn't matter. We were just trying to keep the panic down to a minimum. And, I popped up my phone. I have Wi-Fi tethering on my phone. So I had internet. They're like, how come you have internet? I said, 'cause I pay for it.
You could too.
Yeah. They're, you know what, they're like my first big client. They're my favorite client. You know, they're almost like family to me. But, you know, they have reality issues they have to figure out.
Well, I think what you have to do is, and I think is what you're doing, you're going to set the expectations for what is covered and what is not covered in this type of transaction. And, you know, barring and, you know, whatever you want to call it, I don't want to say act of God, but, you know, barring a power outage or something along those lines or a tornado or a windstorm or whatever, that is beyond your control. And the rare occasions that those things are going to happen, you'll just have to, you know, work it out. And now you said they're connected to five offices. Is that correct?
They have five offices. One of them has its own. It's a bigger office, so it has its own like server. And then the other three offices are satellites of the main office, and they use RDP back to the server to use some like software that is a line of business app that doesn't make sense for. It makes sense to buy the license and maintain it and all that stuff for an office of 10 or plus employees. But for an office where they literally, it's just a little satellite office and most of the time there's only one person there, the license cost is the same.
Okay, right.
So it's, for them, it makes more sense just to like remote back and access it from the main server.
Gotcha. No, that makes sense.
Plus, this software doesn't have a really good way to manage the database of clients globally the way that you would like. So if they were working locally at one of their satellite offices, all that client data would be in its own little kind of siloed database over there. And then the home office would have the master database over here. And at some point, we'd have to do a manual merge. And that's not something we want to do. That's just too much
Right. Yeah. That there's too much that could happen. I would imagine in the merging of those on a consistent regular basis that would probably cause more problems than it would be worth.
Yeah. You know, and it's not a road we want to go down. We're not going to support that. And the software vendor won't support it.
Okay.
And that's what the software vendor solution, they actually do have a great system, but if it's money, like you're going to have, you're going to pay. This is typical of, you know, many, you know, database based line of business kind of applications. You can buy a license for each location, and then you can buy a license for some kind of global management, like web interface or something. You know, they all have a different kind of way of doing it, but you basically get a global account that keeps everything. You know, if keeping it in sync is what you want, you can do that, or you can do permission. You know, it gets more into that enterprise server kind of level of management. But it's really expensive.
Right.
So
in most places, you know, again, for the redundancy of keeping them up and running 24/7, 365 days a year, for the handful of times that it might happen, there a lot of people are just not willing to pay that money.
Yeah. And whenever we present anything like that, they're like, yeah, but can't you just like figure something out?
Right. Yeah. Because that's why you hired me, to give you the answers. So I'm going to steer you in the wrong direction and not give you the right answers to help you out just because I can.
Yeah. Like there's all kinds of stuff we could do, but there's a level and there's a moral line that we try not to cross. I mean, right now we're not really breaking the licensing because, they are kind of, you know, it is part of the same company. It's not really a separate location. It's just kind of a data feed center. Okay. So it's kind of a gray area, but it doesn't feel to me like a massive violation. But if they were, you know, the one office that they do have a second license for, if that office was using the remote and not paying for their own license, then we'd probably have to call them out and say, no, you've got to buy that license because that's not okay.
Right.
So
yeah, and that's good because that's good business sense. You've got to keep above board because if you don't, it could come back to bite you down the road. And then you know what? That tarnishes your reputation. And that is absolutely something that you don't, you know, as a business, as a brand, you absolutely don't want to do.
Right. In a general sense, that's absolutely the way I feel. And then specifically with this software vendor there, we're building a relationship with them and their support team and the salespeople as an IT support company. And next, like later in the summer, early fall, we're going to try to get some kind of a coordinated effort with them so that, you know, they like to have an IT support person or company working with their clients that's familiar with their software. So it could turn into a shared marketing program or even just a referral program. But if they found out we were helping people pirate their software, then there would be no, they would,
right. Exactly.
That'd be off the table.
Yeah. So. No, we don't want to work with you anymore.
Why?
Yeah. I don't know. You were I've come to that conclusion. A lot of times I used to bend over backwards when somebody would have a version of Office on their computer. And they would basically, I would ask them, you know, do you have the software? Do you have the product key? And of course, no. And so a lot of times I would go in and most of the time I could pull the activation key, even though it's quite difficult, you know, in 2010 and above, stuff like that. But I'd do it. I'd get it to authenticate. It was fine, whatever. But then I really come to the point where I'm like going, you know what? I don't know where they got it from. I don't know, you know, maybe it was a volume license, whatever. I'm going to stop doing that. Do you have the software, or at least, you know, I've got all the software. Do you have the product key? If you don't have the product key, then you're either going to have to buy a new version of Office, or, you know, we can put a free version of, you know, LibreOffice or something like that on here, which, you know, most people, they need Office if they're, you know, if they're actually using it. So that's one of the things where I was just like, I'm just not bending over backwards. If you don't have the software, you're either going to have to buy the software and install it. Or if you want to buy the software and get it to me, I'll install it for you. You know, that type of deal. But I don't want to, you know, cross any of those lines. it's not worth it, because I run into a lot of computers that will have a version of Office on it, and they got it from their brother-in-law who works for XYZ company, and they put it on the machine. And then I have to, in a rare occasion, which I don't like to do, but I have to redo a computer. Then I'm at the point where I have to put the software back on. But if I don't have the product keys, you know, I got to go, I'm sorry, I don't have the product keys. You're going to have to either, you know, like I said, buy it or, you know, get it from your brother-in-law again. That's all I can tell you.
Yep. I've got one of those on my bench right now. I probably could have gone the extra mile and cleaned this virus up, but it was so bad. It was like every single, mostly the what are they called? PUP, potentially unwanted
programs. Right.
But it was every single one and stuff, and the new ones that I'd never seen, but it was all the coupon stuff, Conduit, Search Protect. You go through that list, every single one of them was on here. It was insane. And there wasn't anything really valuable on the computer. It'd been a while since I'd been on it. So, let's just do it. You know, we'll gain some benefit from doing a clean install anyway, but she didn't have the key, and I'm almost certain that it came from, like you said, somebody's volume license or something, brother-in-law, whatever. And she's like, well, can't you just put it back on? Like, you didn't get it legally the first time, and I don't have a valid key. You don't have the key. So, she opted not to pay for Office. So she's going to get Open Office or something. I can't remember, either Open or LibreOffice. And then in a week, she's going to say, you know what? I really miss Word. Can we buy the key? And then I'll remote back in and install Office.
There you go. You know what? To be honest with you, I've been pushing people towards, you know, somebody asked me, they said, hey, you know, they brought me two PCs. I've got 2010 on one. Can you put 2010 on the other? I said, yes, if you have a product key. And then I had to explain to them actually what I meant, even though we had this conversation. I said, well, listen, I said, you've already got, it's a newer computer. It's got Windows 8.1 on it. It's already got Office 365 on it. I said, there's a couple things you can do. I don't know how many computers you have in your house, but if you buy a key, an Office 365 subscription for $99 a year, you can put it on up to 5 machines and I think 5 mobile devices.
You mean I have to pay for it every year?
Actually, you know, I didn't get that response because, you know, like I said, I don't know if they need it on all machines and I said, here's the benefit. You will have the latest, greatest Office every year. And every time they update it, you'll get the latest, greatest one. You know, not that much changes in it. And some people quite honestly hate the changes, but whatever. But you'll get supported software that's not going to run out of date and will just be there. I said, or you can actually get a single license if you only want to put it on this computer, and it's $69 a year. Or we can get you Office 2010, or even probably, I don't know if Office has a home and student, the 2013. I haven't really looked at that, but I know you can get a home and student 2010, which you can put on up to 3 computers, but it'll cost you like $129. So there's different options. What, you know, kind of what do you want to do? And you just leave it up to them and they make a decision and you move them along that path. So that's what I found that works best for me. Just give them the options, let them pick the option and then go from there.
Yep. And sometimes they don't like the answer they get, but it just stands like, no, I can't do that. Don't ask me to pirate software and I won't ask you to steal stuff from in other ways. Like what? Just don't. Then they accept it.
Exactly. It's bad enough that I'm moving your torrented MP3 files from one computer to another and not saying anything about it. So actually, to be honest with you, I don't think I've seen anything like that in probably maybe 3 years. Most of the time I do, you know, I don't know where the music's come from because a lot of people are still using iTunes. So they have music in their iTunes folder that they pulled over from wherever. I don't know. Some of it might be legit. Some of it might not. But I would never know the difference between both of them because they're just in a music, you know, iTunes music folder.
Yeah, and iTunes has renamed the file anyway. So now it's...
Exactly.
Yeah. That's actually what happened to this computer there. That was the start of it, I think. Their daughter was hanging out in the office with them and there was a bunch of file sharing stuff on here.
Okay.
So...
Like what do they have nowadays?
I don't know what
like Frostwire?
This was Aries, which is an old school one. I don't know. I guess yeah. It's making a comeback. And then I got pretty deep into it, but I didn't see, and I guess that's what they were using was Aries. And then I got to a point where like things were getting removed by Malwarebytes and then coming back, and Super Anti-Spyware was removing things and they were coming back after a reboot. I was like, you know what? I don't have time for this. We're going to wipe it.
So. You know, it's funny you say that, because I'm actually, you know, Ken Dwight is doing and by the time this airs, it'll already pass, but he's doing a free webinar for the Podnuts community. And I've already been through that webinar. So what I did was I'm actually taking his full 8-hour course. So I'm very interested to see the processes and things that he does to get a machine clean, and then, you know, go from that point and do, you know, the tune up and stuff like that. And hopefully it looks like he has it in a way that is less likely to break Windows, because what I've been finding lately is a lot of times I'm running certain scans with different pieces of software. And if there's something really wrong with the machine, what's happening is Windows is becoming broken. And especially with the different components of 8.1 or 8, you have your mobile apps or modern apps, whatever you want to call them. You have your different, you know, your antivirus, Windows Defender, stuff like that. And it's going to be interesting to see if there's a way to avoid, you know, getting the stuff out as quickly as possible, going back in, doing a tune up, doing the updates, and move on from there. So I'm very interested to learn that type of stuff, and that I'm trying to always make my process better than it was 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I've heard you guys talking about that. I did one an hour webinar a few months ago. And I think I'll end up doing his class, but more just because I find it interesting and I'll run into it. But as a business MSP, we are more looking at creating images,
right,
keeping the images up to date, making sure data is backed up, because we've got, you know, whatever, 100 computers under our watch, and we're busy. If somebody hoses their computer, or, you know, we could sit there and spend all the time removing the virus. Or since it's all kind of a generic setup and we know we have the backups under control, and, you know, it's not a residential thing, so it's a very controlled environment, you just boot up the Pixie server, hit image, you know, do a data recovery, which takes a few seconds over the network, and then bam, they're back up and running. So it's like,
exactly. And for a workstation, you're absolutely right, because a lot of times they're hooked to some sort of, you know, hosted server and stuff like that, where they can just basically be back up and running with their, you know, databases and different things there, where you don't really need that, you know. And I guess the interesting point for me is I still do a lot of residential, and, you know, as far as a residential standpoint, because there's so many different varieties of computers, you know, I understand from an MSP, and I think this is definitely something that, I don't know if you guys do this, but do you use a lot of the same brands? Like, do you sell a certain workstation brand?
Yeah.
Or do you, and also with that, are you inheriting certain things as you're picking up some of these companies?
Well, we definitely inherit stuff. You know, I don't know that we could convince a company that, because we don't like the computers that they have, that they should buy new ones.
Right. Even if they are XP, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, we have successfully got rid of XP from all of our companies. Like, we have no XP in our world.
Nice. Very good.
No, that's a lie. There's one more.
Uh-oh,
left.
Oh, no.
One left. Okay. But he's on board. We just have to. He probably should buy a new computer, but he doesn't want to. And it's just recent enough that we're going to throw. He has capacity for a little bit more RAM, so we're going to get him up to 8 gigs of RAM, and then upgrade his hard drive to an SSD, and then do the up conversion to Windows 7.
Now, so, how old is the computer?
It's a Dell Optiplex, I think, and it's a. I don't know how old it is, but it has a. And I'm not very good at remembering model numbers with CPUs. I have to look them up. But when I looked at it, it was on the higher end, on the, like, right before the I series of processors came out. It's a Core 2 Duo.
Oh yeah, that's perfectly fine.
It's running okay. I mean, and it's fine. So we're gonna upgrade to an SSD just to kind of give it a nice little boost, and then upgrade him to 7, and then because it sort of in his little office it acts as a file sharing server. You know, it's pretty.
Oh, that's perfect. Shoot, I use less stuff for file sharing. I think I've got well, probably not anymore. I do have most of mine are at least dual or quad, but I think I had for a while. I was actually using a Celeron processor for file sharing. It backed up all my stuff and it worked perfectly fine. I actually could stream from it and I had no issues. So you don't really need that much, but yeah, no, that's as long as they're doing that. I just, sometimes you have to explain to the customers, I think, that if they're not willing to buy a new computer, which might be a better option as far as usability and, how you're going to use it on a daily basis. And I just have to explain to them that some of these cheaper machines you're not going to like on a day-to-day basis. They're not going to run the way you think they're supposed to run. They're going to slow down over time a lot quicker than some of these machines that have, more cores and much more RAM, and they just, they run just that much better. So, but it really comes down to the customer is always right, but not really.
Yes. That's probably, if you had to teach somebody an IT support skill, it's how to tell somebody they're wrong without offending them.
Right.
And convincing them that it was their idea to do what you said that they should do.
So here's what I do. I say, listen, I know how you feel, but let me tell you why you're wrong. No, I don't. That probably wouldn't go over too well. But in my mind, that's absolutely what I am saying.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to keep that filter going all the time.
Yes.
Anytime. We have a guy that's, he knows enough to be dangerous. He's really hands-on, and, he's the business owner. He's their head mechanic and lead sales guy. And he's a deal. I mean, the guy is awesome. He's really smart, but he throws around words like IP, like he knows what he's talking about. And he doesn't understand why, if you are a mechanic and a salesperson and a business owner, would you necessarily need to understand all the different layers of networking and what it takes to make things work the way you want? He doesn't, but he thinks he does. So he talks to me in technical terms, but all of the words he's using are wrong. He was talking about something that required a static public IP.
Okay.
And he was wondering if we had not configured the server's IP right with the other computers. We're like, okay, you're talking about two different things, dude. Like, there's public IP, and then there's our local LAN IP. They're different things. They don't mean anything. I mean, they're kind of the same thing, but they're not.
Right.
So, you want to pay me for an hour class on networking? Because I'll do that. But otherwise, why don't you just trust that what I'm telling you is correct, and let's just move on.
So he's not one of those customers that likes to go in and try to look at things and configure them and maybe make some mistakes and make your job. Oh, he is.
Oh, yeah.
See, that's the kind of customer where I think I would go up. Listen, I really like you, but seriously, if you touch that computer again, I'm going to smack your hands with a ruler.
This is not the way I normally just talk to clients, but this guy needs it. Like, I've told him, look, man, you are my nightmare for a client. You are the type of person that I usually walk away from. So I've known him for 15 years, and he's
okay.
Sort of related to family. So I can kind of be a little bit more straight with him,
sure.
But I'm like, you don't want to spend any money. You want everything to work. And you want to jump in and get involved with stuff that you don't really understand yourself, and then you want me to come fix it. So, you need to back off, and you need to trust me a little bit. And back, but he ran. I was there on site. They needed a new Cat 5 cable run. They needed a drop back from the server down to another workstation. And I had the cable, I had the connectors, I had the time and I had the tools and I was already working on something. And I'm like, hey, man, I'll run this. I'll just run this drop right now. He's like, I've got some extra Cat 5 cable left over. I'll run it and then you can hook it up. And I'm like, dude, why? Why would I sit here and watch you do my job and not bill you for that time, but I'm still sitting here spending the time? Like, do you understand that you're asking? Like, would you have a client walk in and you borrow your tools and your workstation and work on their own engine and then just pull out without paying you? Like, no, you wouldn't do that.
Right.
So why would I sit here and help you do your own work and not get paid? This is what I do. So
yeah, let me do what I do and you do what you do and we'll both make money doing what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, yeah, I, you know, it's funny because, it's not funny. It's irritating sometimes, but customers really, if any customers do listen to this show ever, I'm just going to tell you just in a nice way, stop trying to fix things yourself. Just stop. There's no point. If you don't know something, that's okay. That's okay to ask an expert that just wants to have you, just wants to help you and have a good experience so that you can use your computer for things that you want to use it for, whether it be Facebook, QuickBooks, whatever. You can use those computers and not have to worry about all the ins and outs of it. Let somebody else do it. You know, don't try to fix your own stuff.
Yep. And that sentiment right there was why we really wanted to start getting into like monthly service plans to begin with. What, either residential or business, it doesn't matter. If somebody thinks that the minute they dial the phone, they're going to be on the clock, they're going to spend 2 hours of their time researching on Google and messing with stuff in order to avoid having to spend money.
Right.
But
right.
If they know that. They're paying a monthly rate to have somebody be able to just take care of this stuff, then they're fine. They'll call you. So this guy doesn't want to be on a monthly plan. So,
oh yeah. The Mr. Fix-Its never want to be on a monthly plan because they figure, like you said, they'll mess with it, screw it up and then go, hey, yeah, I need this fixed. And then they end up paying you anyways. It's just like going back to the, you know, I used to tell customers way back when, you know, people were downloading MP3s and stuff and videos and all this stuff. I said, all this free stuff you downloaded is not actually free because now you're paying me to fix your machine to get it back up and running so you can use it. So it really, it cost you something.
Yeah.
You know, some customers have looked at me and go, oh, okay. Oh, I get it. Others just kind of, you know, they just want to be, you know, argue and go, well, everybody else does it. Yes. And like I tell my kids, if everybody jumped off a cliff in front of you, would you follow them? Absolutely not. So yeah, it's tough. But yeah, again, you know, customer service is number one. And I really do try to explain things to people that they, you know, in a way that they can understand. In a nice way that they at least have an understanding of what I'm trying to tell them. And what they do with that information, that's totally up to them. I've done my job, and then I can just move on from there and sleep well at night because I've helped somebody hopefully understand that they're part of the problem. But yeah, so you went through and now you got through this whole thing where you were able to get this business back up and running. Now, how long was the power out at this facility before?
I got the text from them that everything had come back up at like 4:30. So, and they were out. They were down from the beginning of the day. So, whatever. I think the power outage started at probably 8 in the morning.
Okay.
So it was an all day. They got back up just in time for like the, hopefully they get some kind of an evening, you know, rush of tax clients, but it was a all day deal.
Okay. So they were down for essentially a day and they, like you said, they could probably make it up in the evening time. Not a big deal. Okay, cool. Well, so what I know you said you had a list of things that you wanted to, you know, bring to the table. Is there something else that you've worked on over the, now, let me ask you this. You work with mostly, you said small and medium businesses, and you don't really work with a lot of residential clients at this point?
No, I The only time I'll do any residential work now is for friends and family, and sometimes, like, you know, the owner of one of our clients wants me to look at his laptop. I'll check it out.
Okay.
So it's mostly because I've gotten to the point where I've gotten really comfortable, I guess, with being, okay, these are my clients. These are their computers. This is their network. These are the passwords. This is how this works. I know everything about this office. I know the people, and they know me, and we have a relationship, and we work together, and it's cool. Going into a residential, like when I had Google AdWords running, I'd get every time a new client, you have to like, well, especially our area is pretty saturated with the Craigslist tech and the, you know, and legit. I mean, there's support everywhere.
Right.
On the stretch of kind of mainish street in our town where there's store, you know, grocery stores and all that kind of stuff. There's three big box, well, one big box and two, you know, smaller, but, you know, decent sized independent computer repair shops. Oh, that's like a half a mile from my house. And then there's a Best Buy over there. And then there's, you know, so every time you talk to somebody, they want to haggle the rate. They don't know if they can trust you. How do I know that blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, and for $60, and then I got to, you know, it's just not. And I just found that once I started getting into the business world, I like my clients. They like me. I know how their stuff works. I don't have to come in and figure out, you know, did a cat sleep on the fan vent and, you know, all that stuff. It just, you know, I grew out of having to deal with that stuff. And now I gladly do it. Now it makes it enjoyable for me to go over and help out, you know, a friend or my mom or something like that. It's like, oh, a little bit of a, you know, here's a new puzzle I can figure out, or I can help somebody in their house. But
right. No, that's good. So now you said you're kind of getting to the point we were talking earlier where you're kind of expanding your business at a rate that you're thinking about, okay, am I going to bring some people in, or, you know, how am I going to handle this, you know, this rush of, you know, customers and deal with them on a regular basis. So kind of what were you going through with all your thought process in that area?
And I talked about it a bit on the last time, so I won't go back all the way to the beginning, but I was working with a business partner and a friend of mine, and he is a little bit more focused on like point of sale and retail. And I do a little bit more like traditional office, but we have a lot of, you know, networking still there, phone systems are still there, you know, there's a lot of foundation that's still the same. So we started working together. We got to a point where we realized, you know, there's some business philosophies and some inconsistencies and stuff that maybe we shouldn't join, you know, and form one company. But we, you know, we came to that realization early enough that before there were any big disputes or problems.
Right.
So we still work together. We're still friends. We get on the phone, or we go to a site or something, you know, weekly or more. And we have some vendor relationships that are mutually held. You know, we share an account with a vendor or something, and get some commission royalties that way. And I think we found that balance where it's like, no, we are both chiefs, and it's hard for two chiefs to hang out in the same tribe. And
right.
There are things that I didn't really want to bend on that he was pretty passionate about, and vice versa. And it's like, hey, you know what? Let's continue to have a good relationship and be friends and a business relationship. And you can run your company, I can run my company, and then we can kick back referrals to each other, go on sales, you know, go a little sales run together, because sometimes it's better to have two people to bounce ideas off of. And so that's been, plus he's got strengths that I don't have. He's good at research. He loves research.
Okay.
And I like research. So he'll just dig into stuff, and he's really good at coming up with solutions for things. And he's good at finding vendors and stuff like that. And he's got a lot of great ideas. And then I've got some other strengths. So we do complement each other. So ultimately, we're basically like, you know, two aligned companies that help each other out and have a good relationship, but we're not a company. So that's kind of put off the need immediately to hire a tech, because we can kind of cover each other's tracks. And he knows my clients and I know his. So like if I needed to take a day off or if I wasn't available, he'll go run out and go on site, and they all know him. So it actually works out really nice, kind of the best of both worlds that way.
That seems like a really good way to have it. It seems like a good relationship to have that set up that way, because that's where a lot of us, I think, as techs, a lot of times if we're not around to take the call or we're not around to deal with the crisis, and it just doesn't get done. And so if you can have somebody that you trust, and like you said, you guys aren't, you know, one company, but you're two separate companies, and you can back each other up, that's almost a perfect world right there. And I know some people say, well, you know, people are always afraid of somebody else stealing their customers. And quite honestly, here's my philosophy. If you can steal my customer, you can have them. Because if they're flaky moving from me to you, they'll be flaky again and move to somebody else. I'm not worried about it. People get all bent out of shape, I think, in today's day and age, when it comes down to customers and you know, and you even talked a little bit about saturation. And here's what I've seen, you know, going back to that, if you look at the Craigslist, you know, texts and stuff like that, and don't get me wrong, people, everybody needs to start off somewhere. I get it. So start off on a Craigslist and do good work and do the best you can. What I've noticed is the people that are charging these lower rates, they literally, I see them come and see them go, and it's all within the same year. 6 to 8 months, they're here and gone. And so here's the thing. Guess what? I'm in for the long haul. I'm still going to be around, and people are going to go, yeah, I was, you know, I had a guy today. He did a search. I think he was on his phone, and he's like, and he calls me up. He's like, yeah, I saw yours with another guy that I didn't really know, which didn't make any sense because the guy didn't know me either. So I'm kind of like going, that was interesting. And then he's like, and then, you know, I didn't want to take it to Best Buy. And I go, okay, that's fine. You know, but the guy talked to me on the phone, and I look at it this way. If I can't sell myself on the phone, if you don't trust me from talking to me, then we're not going to work well together. So it doesn't matter. So go find somebody else that you do trust, whether it be a Best Buy or whatever. It doesn't matter. But you know what I find? A lot of my customers, once I get them on the phone and they're talking to me, and I talk to them like a normal human being, and I'm there to help them, and they can hear that in my voice, you know what? Most of the time, they're going to bring it to me. And it really, at that point, here's what's weird. Those types of customers, when I throw the price out there, even though it's higher than a lot of other people, it doesn't matter. They don't even, they'll ask the price, but they don't really care because they trust me for whatever reason. And that's, I think that's what I really try to portray to people is I'm here to help you, bring it to me. I'm going to take care of you, and we'll get your computer back up and running, and you'll be on your way and happy, and you'll like the service.
Yeah. I'm not as successful at doing that, which is another reason that I got out of residential.
And you know what? But you're smart in that sense, because I think everybody should stay in their own strengths. So if you're strong, and it sounds like you've got these businesses nailed down, and even though I believe we're always going to learn, you're in there, you've got everything set up. Like you said, you've built relationships. It sounds like it's actually fun for you to go to these places and talk to these customers as you're fixing your problems, for the most part.
Oh yeah. There's obviously like clients that I don't, well, it's not even clients. It's maybe the one guy in the office or something that
sure.
It's not my favorite, but for the most part, I have a, you know, I like going to their office. I love doing this, you know? So when I basically find myself doing some kind of a certain type of job or a certain kind of work that I don't love and it's annoying, I go, you know, let's not try to do this anymore. Let's try to do the other stuff that's fun.
Right. So. Exactly. No, that's smart business. And that's why, you know, I kind of tell people all the time, stop trying to be a jack of all trades. None of us are going to be that. You know, you have to pick your strengths and stick in those areas because you're going to be happier that way. You're going to, you know, you'll make more money that way. Because if you're constantly, it's happened to me. There's things that I don't like to do. And man, will I put them off on a back burner just because I don't like to do them. And it's like, and that's not good for my customers. That's not good for my business. So I want to pick the things that I, you know, not everything's going to be, you know, happy-go-lucky. Don't get me wrong. Virus removals still to this day irritate the dog out of me. And mostly because after the time that I've removed the viruses, I break windows and I've got to fix it. But that's a whole nother story. So, but yes, definitely stick to your strengths.
Yeah. And so, that's where automated tools like D7 come in. So
exactly. Now, okay, so before we go into that, because I'm interested in some of the tools that you've been using since the last time we've talked and if there's been any changes or anything. But are you at the point where you're getting past the point of you're a one man shop basically, even though you have a backup with another company? Are you at a point where you're going, man, this is almost too much work for me to handle?
Well, it's too much for me to handle in a timely manner, like if something needs to be dealt with right now.
Gotcha. Okay.
I could have four things hit me at the same time, and then I have to basically choose, like, who do you save? Like a superhero dilemma, you know? But
now, obviously, retainer clients first. Those who have, you know, are paying you a monthly fee are going to be at the top of the list, correct?
I have sort of a two-part triage, and it's all in my head. There's no rules to this, which is why it's hard to hire techs. But, you know, it's I know them on a personal level enough that, first of all, I know who's going to be the most upset if they get backburnered. So that's one. Two, what degree of an emergency is this? Can they not print to their favorite printer, but they can print to another printer? Okay, well, you know, that might get backburnered because this person's server is down.
Okay, right.
So it all sort of meshes together, and I'm sure there's some kind of an algorithm somewhere in the back of my brain that I could actually try to formulate, but it's really like it's instinct. Really, you know which situation is the most dire, and which customer is going to be the most understanding if they have to wait an hour, and work it out that way. And definitely, the clients that are paying me on a retainer are going to take some precedent because now they're expecting. Well, they're expecting because I told them that they would get
exactly
a priority service.
Yeah, customer expectation, right. You said, if you pay me this monthly fee, you'll be the first on my list if something happens.
Yep. So, you know, I have to kind of honor that. But
sure.
But they're also reasonable. I say, hey, look, here's the workaround for this for you guys that you can, you know, you can deal with this for a couple hours. And if you don't mind, like this customer over here, their whole internet and site went down and I think the building's on fire. So I really need to go help them, but I'll be right with you, you know, and it works. It's fine.
Now, go ahead.
No, I say, but so starting, next week, we have signed up with Continuum, as a, monitoring and help desk solution. So, they have a software applet that you install on all the PCs in the office, and it's a lot like Max Focus in that way.
Okay.
Except that for a flat rate every month, per asset, they will whitelist, you know, brand, then handle any help desk calls and remote stuff.
Okay.
So I know Chris sells a service similar to this one. And actually, if we hadn't already got so much momentum going into getting Continuum signed up and got into a contract, we probably would have looked at him. But so basically flat rate every month, so we can factor it into their flat rate that they pay us. There's unlimited phone support, and the software manages a lot of stuff on the computer as far as updates are concerned and initiating tickets. They can communicate through it. It includes a LogMeIn Pro subscription for each computer for us to use and for the techs that are on the help desk to use. So, and it integrates with AutoTask. So we have our ticketing system integrated with our management system, and it's monitoring the computers. And then we have a whole, we have a help desk, a call center that will alleviate probably 80 to 90% of the calls, because most of them are quick fixes that can be handled over the phone or remotely.
Right.
So, at that point, it's the hope and, hopefully the reality is that that'll free me up from doing daily support, and I can start focusing more on business and then just, you know, working on scheduled projects. So, you know, a customer knows that they're going to get a new office. We schedule the wiring and all that stuff, which I'm also got a great guy that has a contracting company that just does mostly wiring and like surveillance. So we use him when we have to do a big wiring job. So I'm really trying to become more, I spend a lot of time working in the business, that whole, like, if you're working too much in your business, you're not working for your business or something like that.
Right. Right.
So trying to start looking at this more of as a business owner and not just the guy that just the computer guy goes running around working his ass off every day.
Right. Yeah. You're not the guy trying to put out fires, you know, all the time. Right.
Yep.
No, that makes sense.
So that's really, I mean, we'll see how that goes. That is the next adventure, and that's going to start next week. We have to start the onboarding process, and it involves a lot of documentation, obviously, because they need to know how to do stuff. They need to know passwords and IP schemas and, you know, what software, especially line of business software, they will support to an extent if you give them detailed notes.
Gotcha. So, okay.
All these little issues that I know how to fix with their tax prep software for that one client, if I can document those notes and put them into their knowledge base in a way that's searchable and everything, then they'll handle a lot of stuff. And we'll just get the record of what they've been doing and then escalate it if something really needs our attention.
Well, I would definitely be interested in hearing, you know, after you've been with them for a while and kind of checking out and if that's working for you and how it's working for you, because I'm sure other people would be interested. I think a lot of things are going that way as far as, I think, you know, remote support tech teams, some of these different companies that are out there, it's going to be important for people in our business, because a lot of times it is very hard. You get to that point where it's like, I really can't afford or don't want to afford at this point another technician. So I am going to hire somebody, a help desk of sorts. And if you can get these systems that have, you know, the managed services and everything all included, I think it's a win-win situation. And I mean, a lot of that stuff is done remote. I mean, how much of your business right now are you doing remotely? Just from the standpoint of if somebody calls you and they have a problem, are you remoting in a lot of times versus going on site?
Yeah. It's seasonal, like because of the preparations and there's new hardware being installed, and then there's some things with printers that are harder to do remotely. But so like this month I'm on the road quite a bit, but for the most part, you know, especially through the summer, things tend to kind of mellow out for some reason. Yeah, I can work remotely. I'll work either from an iPad or my desk or, you know, whatever. Once you have the network set up, you have the remote access, and you know how it all works, and you're careful not to do stupid things like try to fix a network stack over a remote connection, which I did 2 days ago.
Oh, yes. Well, we've all done that.
I did it kind of knowing the risk, and I had a key, and I knew that if I had to, I could go to the office. And actually, that turns out... My friend Wes that I was talking about, he's the other tech that I work with. He was out kind of near that office, and he was already out. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and he was coming back from another job. And I texted him, I was like, "Hey, that was stupid." And he's like, "What?" And he offered to swing by, and he actually went and rebooted the computer for me. And I was like, "Oh man, thanks for saving me that drive at 2 o'clock in the morning."
Oh, nice. There you go.
So great example of how the teamwork helps out a lot.
No, and I think I think you're right. That's a smart choice. You guys, you know, having to separate businesses, but still able to watch each other's back. And I think that's another great asset that maybe a lot of us don't have out here, but maybe it's something we need to look for in, you know, in our prospective areas.
Yeah. I mean, I know I've got a great relationship with a local, he focuses more on business, but he does printers. He supplies refurbished toners, and they're very high quality. I know for the past few years, some high volume clients, they've never had a problem with his toner cartridges. And if they, every once in a while, one's kind of a dud and he'll just replace it. That's, you know, like laser toner, and he sells printers, and it's funny. I thought he did the support for the printers. He doesn't manage print services, but he actually subcontracts, his print service, like the maintenance, to another company. I contract to him for print, like, you know, reselling toner and, manage print services. And he actually subcontracts out the maintenance. I don't know how it all works. It's crazy.
Oh, there's no way you could not pay me to work on a printer. It will never happen. I will set one up. I will network one for you. I will make sure that, you know, you can push the right buttons to do what you need to do. I absolutely, if there's something broken, that's going to somebody else.
Yep. Absolutely. Those springs and stuff. I mean, I used to work on cars a lot, and I like mechanical things, but printers are not one of them. I don't like touching them.
I laugh because, you know, I used to do all my own maintenance on my own vehicles. And I've told my kids when they first got their vehicles that they had to change oil, rotate the tires, check the brakes, all that kind of stuff. And so it's funny because I actually get my oil changed, because actually it's more cost effective for me to do that than to do it myself, but they still change their own oil. So, I said, hey, when you get my age, you'll probably get to that point where you won't have to change your oil anymore. You can choose to do it or not to. I choose not to do it anymore because I don't feel like it. I'll do something else that I, you know, is a little cleaner, and I, you know, I like to sit back a little bit, and, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, it becomes a factor of time. I like working on my car, but for me, because I don't have an oil station set up, because that's not what I do every day, I've got to go get the oil drain pan, and I'm going to have to drive to a store to buy the oil and the filter and bring it back, and then set up the jack, and then make sure that the car is not going to fall on me, and then, you know, spend the time to do it. And then now it's drained, and now I've got and I don't have a truck. So if I have a dirty oil drain pan, I don't really want to put it in my car, but I got to take it to dump it somewhere.
Right.
We're talking about like a 2 to 3 hour process, but I could do it in 20 minutes if I go to a shop.
Exactly. It does come down to a time factor, and that's exactly where I'm at. I don't have the time to do those things that I used to do all the time on a regular basis. And so it comes down to I'm going to do other things that are going to make me money so that I can pay somebody else to do those things that are just going to burn up time and not make me any money.
Right.
So that's that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah. Save $20. But lose 3 hours. So
exactly.
It's what I try to explain to my clients, you know, when I'm trying to tell them how the computer service plans work. Like, well, we can manage all this stuff and you will pay a certain amount, but what's your time worth when your stuff goes down?
Exactly.
And so, you know, it's typical. Anyway, I still change my oil there every once in a while, but it's more of like a hobby. It's like, oh, this is fun.
Gotcha.
Make sure my tools still work.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I do have all the tools and everything, and, you know, my kids use them, and that's great. I can't remember the last time I've had to actually open the box. I look at them every once in a while. They look nice, shiny, but that's me. So anyways, I sit and, you know, I sit behind a mic and just podcast all day long, or, you know, work on computers or go to my job, you know. So, yeah, I'm kind of busy any way you look at it, but... I choose to do what I want to do now. Sorta. No, that's good. So let's just take the last, you know, few minutes that we have and talk about, are there any tools that you absolutely, and you might've talked about them before, is there any new revelations or tools that you're using today that you just couldn't live without? It makes your job that much easier.
Yeah, I think that, I think I mentioned the QNAP, their TurboNAS line last time, but now they keep coming out with models, and they're blowing up right now, their ecosystem and their and the different offerings that they have. So, and now we've like really incorporated them into our it's a tool that we have in every location now. It's required as part of our service plan. So the QNAP is, well, there's different models, but you know, it's a NAS, but it has an Intel-based processor in it, and you can put up to 16 gigs of RAM in most of their models, and it's basically a Linux server. So on top of the fact that it's a network-attached storage, we have there's an IT management station that comes with it, and okay. So you can set that up to both. It'll be a Pixie server, so you can use it to deploy tools through Pixie Boot or capture an image from a computer or deploy back an image, restore an image. It does automated backup and recovery that way as well, and it'll monitor the status of certain things. We're still kind of going through all the features of it, but I mean, that's a phenomenal tool. It requires a license beyond five. Like, you get the first five computers in the office for, or in your environment for free. And then I think there's a one-time license of like $50 to add a computer. But you're getting a imaging system, kind of like Acronis, if you buy into the Acronis system. And with the, you know, the whole Pixie environment, and that alone is huge, because that's, like I said, that's kind of our strategy. Like, we really don't want to spend time cleaning up computers. We'd rather get them pristine and perfect, capture an image, and then go through and, once, you know, maintain like Windows updates and stuff, capture a new image, and then just dump the image back on if there's a problem. So,
right.
And so that's one tool that it has, but it also manages security cameras. So all the locations that have surveillance cameras, it'll store the data. It will like manage what's recorded and what's not based on rules that you can put into it. And then it'll send out alerts if a camera goes down or it hasn't seen it for a while. It'll tell you, you know, it manages, you can set up your storage limitations and rules. So it becomes like an entire NVR solution, but it also has, you can set up globally in the system, you set up users, like any server, and you can give them permissions. So maybe they can only see this camera and not that camera, or they can see all the cameras, but they can't go into the playback mode. So you can define all these user permissions and roles. So you've got an IT management station, surveillance station. It can host a web server if you wanted to do, like a, you could do, I mean, if you really wanted, if you had the bandwidth, you could host a website, but you know, an intranet would be cool. It wow. manages it manages signage stations. So if you want to do digital signage. Okay. So anyway, I can kind of go on and on about all the features of the QNAP. If you wanted to use it for your home, you could buy one of the kind of lower end, the lower models, I think the 221 or something. And it could be a great media center. It'll host Plex, and it has nice. an HDMI output. It'll do XBMC Plex. It kind of like a Roku, where you have like a very simple sit back kind of interface, lean back kind of interface on the screen on an HDTV, and you can hit like Yahoo or Pandora. So they're, I don't know, they're phenomenal. You can go all the way. You can go from just like your low-end home little NAS, or up to, they have, you know, an i7 rack mount, 10 bay, you know, real, like it's a server. That whole lineup is definitely a huge part of our tool. Plus, you can host VMs. So in an office that maybe doesn't have like a traditional server, and we need to have something to jump into so that we can remote in and maybe look at the settings on the router or whatever, you know, having a Windows PC in an office on the network is definitely an important tool to have if you're doing remote support. We throw a VM on the QNAP, and that's our computer. So,
oh, very nice. It sounds like it can do a lot of things to help you support your businesses.
Yeah.
Or whatever you need to do. Now, just real quick, the difference between a NAS, which is network attached storage, which a lot of people will just look at it as a place to throw files and stuff like that. Now, can you put a database in the NAS that it can be served to the other computers, the workstations?
Yeah, we have one client that they have a traditional server, but on the one location, but they just have one of these QNAPs in one of their smaller locations, and it is hosting the all the data for their line of business app,
right?
And so it will. I don't know, you know, on like on a high demand level, I'm just not, you know, maybe qualified to say what its capabilities are, but you can look at the specs, and if you were, you know, really running a very high demand database application, you could see if it would work for you. But we don't have any problems with you know, using it. As we have one client where it's just a VM basically to manage like their QuickBooks share. We have another client that it's running more of like a traditional server. It, because it has the HDMI output and USB drives, we use it as a PC. If we have a client that's really budget conscious and really, we really want them to have this, but they can't justify buying this just to sit in the closet, we go with the slightly higher model, the 253, and it becomes an actual PC. Like they're running a VM, but they have no idea. They have a monitor, keyboard, and mouse, and they just use it like a computer.
And that's a great tip.
Yeah. So, you know, and for like with drives, a memory upgrade and the device itself and a little markup, we can sell one of these for like $1,000. So yeah, $1,000 is expensive, but when you tell them that it's also going to take the place of having to buy that computer they were going to need to upgrade anyway, now they were going to have to spend $600-$700 on that computer. Now this device is like $300.
Right.
You know, in the difference, and in the back end, it's still running the surveillance station or the backup system or whatever we need it for. So those, I mean, you just start looking at it. The possibilities are endless. I didn't even really scrape the surface. That's just the meat of what we use it for.
No. And I used to actually use workstations for, you know, serving databases. So pretty much any database that I've ever encountered, and these weren't on beefy systems. You're just serving the information. It's going back and forth over the network. You can pretty much have anything, you know, serve it. I think the only thing that a traditional server would give you would be, you know, you have your group policies and stuff like that. You have more granular control over the workstations in the office versus just having something that is serving them information and maybe backing up data and things like that. So to me, cost-effective-wise, this seems like a perfect solution versus maybe even putting in a full-fledged server, because with licensing per workstations and all that kind of stuff, it's going to be, I would imagine, still more expensive than $1,000.
Oh, yeah. If you needed to get terminal server cowls or whatever, yeah, definitely a better solution. And then if you still wanted to have a server, you could just go with a slightly higher-end model and host a virtualized Windows server, and it would, you know, then you'd have your server, and it could manage it just fine. So we have that as a backup option. So we have a server that we have, you know, a physical to virtual image backup to the QNAP, and if the server were ever to fail, we could pop that VM up, and then their server would come back up as a virtual machine on the QNAP. So,
oh, that's perfect. That's a great solution. Great backup solution.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah, I don't know where we are on time, but,
well, we have, go ahead.
No, I said, do you have like a few more minutes or
where are we? Yeah, go ahead. You know what? Go ahead. Go for it. Okay. What else you got?
Actually, you know what? I think it'd be kind of cool to do just a VoIP show. And kind of save this for that.
Okay.
Maybe do another episode. Cause like we spent the last like year being tortured by VoIP just to learn everything about it. We didn't know anything about it. We just knew that it was voice over IP.
Right.
And we went through like building our own VoIP solution and then realized that that was a bad idea. And you know, but it, I think it would have been nice for me to have someone go through and just kind of give that overview of how VoIP works. Because it's really cool once you get it going.
That, you know what? That would be a great show topic, and we can definitely do that. So yeah, let's go ahead and plan on that. We'll put that down on the calendar and get you back on. So with that, all that being said, if people wanted to find you and maybe ask you a question, what would be the best way to do that?
Well, if you go to the website, just our company site, there's a contact form on there. Brad, it's ttcscomputerservices.com. My email address is pretty hard to figure out. It's brad@ttcscomputerservices.com. You know, if that, I have Google Plus, Facebook, and all that, but I'm not the best. I'm not very active. So if someone wanted to ask me anything about anything we've talked about, or find a good VoIP provider or anything like that, or whatever, I'm open. Anyone can just email me and I'll get back to them.
Great. Well, I appreciate you coming out on the show and sharing with us today. You have brought a bunch of information that has been, some funny stories, but also a lot of good information that I think will help somebody out there. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be looking forward to the next one.
Awesome. All right. You guys can also find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, please email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. If you want to leave us a voicemail, please call 1-888-697-0162. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you guys need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. And if you guys could, please leave us a rating and review over on iTunes. That will help you let more people know about us. You guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Hallish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.